You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Now an update on the avian flu. Avian flu is a virus that infects mostly birds. Chickens are especially vulnerable. 10 Asian countries have reported cases of avian flu. Thailand, Vietnam, China among them. And the virus has passed from birds into people in some areas, and upwards of 8 people have died of this flu. And more than 25 million birds have died or have been killed in this latest outbreak. Joining me now to talk more about avian flu, whether it poses a major threat to humans and how it can be controlled. Maybe you'll talk about a bit about a flu vaccine under development. Are my guests, Scott Harper, a medical epidemiologist in the infectious disease branch at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. He joins us by phone. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Harper.
You bet.
Daniel Perez is an assistant professor of virology, University of Maryland. He joins us by phone from College Park, Maryland. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Perez.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the flu. What strain of the flu are we talking about? Are there a lot of different strains out there, Dr. Perez?
Well, there are many strains of influenza virus. Actually, based on the making of the surface of the virus, we recognize up to what we call 15 hemagglutinin subtypes of the virus. And the bird flu that is happening right now in Asia is due to just one of them.
So then, Scott Harper, why are public health officials so worried about this virus?
Well, I think people are so worried because this potentially can cross over into the human population, as we have seen happen several times over the last few years since 1997, when it was first noted in Hong Kong. And then the real fear is that a human virus, a typical garden variety influenza virus that circulates every year, might actually recombine with an avian virus in a human host. So the human host would be co-infected with two viruses, and then that would produce a virus that could be quite deadly and that could spread very efficiently from person to person.
Would we have 1918 all over again?
That is a potential fear. There were three pandemics in the 20th century, and 1918 was the biggest one, but there were also two others, one in 1957 and one in 1968, when there were far increased numbers of deaths and hospitalizations due to the new influenza that was circulating.
Give us an update, Scott Harper, on the latest numbers. Have you got a number on how many infected, how many dead, things like that?
Yes, in Vietnam, we know of 8 laboratory-confirmed human cases, with 6 of those having died, one of them recovered, one is still hospitalized. And in Thailand, we know of 3 laboratory-confirmed human H5 cases. 2 of them died, and one of them recovered. And those are the only human cases of avian influenza that we currently know about.
Dr. Perez, how easy is it for this to spread?
Well, so far as we know, the virus cannot spread from human to human, although the virus can be spread very easily within the avian population. And I think the biggest fear right now is that this is not only in domestic species, but also in wild birds as well, which would make very difficult to control the virus if that is the case.
So if it escapes from the chickens and the domestic animals and gets into, for example, wild geese, things like that, it might spread much quicker.
Not necessarily much quicker, but many countries would be at risk of having the virus.
And so the deaths that have come have not come from human to human spread, but from bird to person spread.
That's my understanding. Yes.
Do we have any? Do we know how well that this is being controlled in any of those Asian countries where they're being found?
Well, perhaps Dr. Harper can give you a better idea of that. I mean, right now many countries are performing massive culling of chickens just to prevent the spread of the disease.
Dr. Harper?
Yes, that's correct. They're undergoing a number of different operations to try to reduce the numbers of infected birds in all of these countries. And the problem is right now it's just such a widespread problem, really unprecedented as far as we know, and having this kind of geographic spread of avian disease in the poultry population. And we have to remember that this is occurring in many countries that are quite resource poor. So the finances and the funds for having people to go out and do the culling of the birds, for reimbursing the farmers that are losing their birds, et cetera, are really not there. And that's going to be a major hurdle to face as control efforts proceed in the culling.
Are there any drugs that can successfully ward it off?
There are antiviral influenza drugs which can be used for this and for other influenza viruses. And so it's recommended that people who have contact with infected birds during the culling operations and if they have contact with infected patients actually take these drugs to prevent them from getting the influenza, as well as taking care of other personal protective measures like wearing masks and gowns, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Could these drugs be spread? Could you make enough batches, or is it just too expensive to do that with the drugs that work?
Well, they are quite expensive. Some of the classes of the drugs are, and they also are in limited supply. And so those are two problems that are being faced right now. But I think that it's not probably the key issue, and one which Dr. Perez could address as well, is the development potentially of a vaccine, which in the long run would really be the key instrument in terms of preventing spread of this virus.
Dr. Perez, where do we stand with the vaccine?
Well, the vaccine right now, one of the features that this virus has right now is that the virus is so pathogenic that when you have to prepare a vaccine, normally it's done in eggs, and this virus will kill the chicken embryo. So we have to actually modify the virus to be able to make a vaccine that will grow in enough titers so we can produce enough of this virus to make a vaccine. My understanding right now is that different laboratories around the world are working on preparing a vaccine using a technique called reverse genetics, which is basically in vitro engineering of the virus, so the virus is not so pathogenic anymore, and it can be grown to high titers. I think that kind of work is ongoing right now.
Mm-hmm. If it does spread from human to human, and the virus combines with another virus, would the vaccines that are being developed be useless?
I don't think the vaccine will be useless. I think the vaccine will be, first of all, we don't know how effective the vaccine will be. We think that the vaccine is certainly going to alleviate part of the problem. But if a pandemic starts, we have to also think that to make the vaccine, it will take let's suppose that we have a seed stock of the virus right now getting into massive production, it will take maybe 4 or 6 months. And if the pandemic starts now, the vaccine may come a little bit late. But nevertheless, if we
just,
have vaccine,
just a little bit. 4 to 6 months is past the flu season.
Well, I think a couple of things to remember there are that actually, you know, pandemics occur a little bit outside of a normal flu season. Mm-hmm. And so historically with a pandemic, you would see a first wave of disease, in which time we would not actually have a vaccine available. But the worst part of many pandemics in the past has actually been the so-called second wave. And so everyone would hope by that time that we would have a very good vaccine up and running and getting into arms.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's what we are all hoping.
How would you know? What would be the signs? What would be the key signals that would tell us that it is beginning to be a pandemic, that it is beginning to spread from human to human?
Well, I think that, first of all, it'd be important to illustrate that even if it does spread human to human, it doesn't mean that that's necessarily the beginning of the pandemic. And we mm-hmm. fully expect to see some cases with this outbreak of human to human transmission, because the possibility of having human contact with these birds is so high. We expect to see more cases of human disease and limited, at least, human-to-human transmission, as we saw in Hong Kong in 1997. I think the real sign of, or one of the sentinel signs of a pandemic occurring, would be starting to see clusters of disease that are separated in time and space within these affected countries in populations, for instance, that are urban dwelling, do not have any poultry contact at all, et cetera. And then another potential event would be looking at the viruses from those people to see whether or not they were still viruses composed only of avian genes or if there were also human genes that might have recombined, as mentioned in the prior process.
1-800-989-8255. We're talking about avian bird flu this hour on Science Friday. Is it just a matter of time before we see cases in this side of the world, in North America?
I don't think that we can really adequately predict what will happen with that. You know, last year with SARS, for instance, although that's quite a different virus, the transmission is different, epidemiology is different, we were expecting to see many more United States cases than we did, and it's still unclear exactly what the combination of factors were that kept that from really mushrooming here. We certainly had quite good infection control practices and quarantine practices in place, but it may not be that that was completely what was contributing to it. So that being said, we just don't know, and so we are doing quite a lot of work for domestic preparedness on this side in case we were to start hearing about returning travelers from affected countries that had the same sort of clinical presentation that they're experiencing over there.
Dr. Perez?
Yes.
Do you think it's a matter of time until it gets here?
One of the features with influenza is that we really know very little about what it takes for this virus to jump from species to species. So it's hard to say that it's going to happen, but certainly the risk is there, more than now than ever, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to the phone lines. Got a call in here from Shelley in St. Louis. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. I recently read a study that the New York Department of Wildlife tested 20,000 birds, I think. 11% of them had died of West Nile virus, but 25% of them had died directly from pesticide poisoning. And so my question is compromised immune system affecting these birds? And my personal view is that chemical exposure and pollution and pesticide exposure is compromising all of our immune systems, and this might be a bigger factor than the virus itself.
You think that the virus is not strong enough to finish off the birds, but the immune system compromised might be?
Right. If they're exposed to pesticides,
yeah.
And then, right.
All right, let me get an answer. Dr. Perez, what do you think?
Well, we are actually currently in our lab considering factor that the immune system, any immunodeficiency may promote the emergence of any disease agent in a new host. I mean, we know that, for example, in humans infected with HIV, they are prone to other diseases or opportunistic infections that they would not have if they were healthy. Mm-hmm. So we think that other in non-animal systems, it will be the same. Anything that affects the immune system could make them more susceptible to certain diseases mm-hmm. if that otherwise would not happen.
Okay, Shelley, thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go to Paul in Hillsborough, North Carolina. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions. One is, it's my understanding that this problem is largely in Asia, and I wonder why that is. Do we not have these viruses in the U.S., and why don't we, or do we have others that just don't cause the problems? And the second part is, I have a small flock of free-roaming chickens, and I wonder if, theoretically anyway, if we do have viruses, or if they were to be introduced into the U.S., could a small bird such as a sparrow, which readily goes between my flock and other small flocks, serve as a vector for infecting my flock or another? And I'll take this answer off the air.
Thanks for calling. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Dr. Perez, is he overly cautious?
He has asked a very valid question. Sparrows are not host themselves, but since much of these viruses are excreted with the feces and they are going from flock to flock, they could carry the virus in their legs, basically, and spread the virus that way.
Mm-hmm.
There is a risk that could happen. The first question
was why it doesn't not happen in this country. Why are we seeing the outbreak in Asia?
Well, one of the things that happened in Asia particularly is that certain agricultural practices, the raising of poultry and humans, the large population of poultry that they have, commingling with humans and pigs, which have been also proposed as a potential intermediate host in the emergence of influenza, create an environment that is ideal for these viruses to come out. But saying that and considering what happened in the last two pandemics, that they were, at least the last two pandemics were originated in Asia, those situations are, or that kind of practices happen all over the world, in the United States also. So I think that we cannot say that it would not happen here. Maybe there is some, and that's the reason why we are studying all these viruses. Maybe there is something in the viruses that are circulating in North America that for some reason don't make it into a virus that can cause a pandemic or that can go to humans. But I think we have limited knowledge in that respect to say that this will not happen here.
How do you stop this? Is it just basically killing the birds?
Well, yes, the killing of the birds, the culling of the birds is a primary way to stop the infections within the poultry flocks. And in fact, just to follow on with Dr. Perez's comments, you know, we have had outbreaks in this country as well of avian influenza, which have necessitated culling of large numbers of birds in the recent past. And so it's not even a theoretical concern. It's happened here as well.
But we had millions had to be killed, if I remember right.
Exactly.
In Maryland?
Yes, so along the eastern seaboard. And so it's not a theoretical concern in terms of the avian population. And so, in fact, could well happen in terms of affecting our poultry and our poultry industry, but also then going on into the human population.
Where is the reservoir? Where does it hide this flu and then suddenly pop up?
Well, I think that Dr. Perez had mentioned a little bit earlier that these are viruses that are primarily in birds, and there are 15 different types of them, and they are in that population. And one of the reasons why we will probably never eradicate influenza as we eradicated smallpox is for this reason.
Dr. Perez, so it's always out there and just waiting for an opportunity to come back?
I think that's exactly what happens. I mean, aquatic birds and shorebirds are particularly the primary reservoir of these viruses. And as long as we have those birds, we will always have the chance of having an influenza virus coming to different animal species, including humans.
And that's why you're looking for some trigger, some environmental action that might weaken the birds?
We are looking on, on the environmental factors that can make viruses more successful to be in different species. And also we are looking at particularly what it takes in a virus to go from species to species.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Daniel Perez, Assistant Professor of Virology at the University of Maryland. Scott Harper, Medical Epidemiologist at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to look at a bacterial predator, the first living antibiotic. It's bug eating bug. Stay with us.